This episode of Talk of the Devils is sponsored once more by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders phase. Yep, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling ETH style turtleneck sweaters or blueprints for brand new stadiums, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to Talk of the Devils, you can sign up for our $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/reddevils, all in lowercase without any spaces. So go to shopify.com/reddevils to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/reddevils.
The Athletic.
Is it crossed the line? Yes, it has! Fantastic header!
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. And my word, have we got a lot to reflect on today and look forward to as well. We've got that incredible draw at Stamford Bridge. Weird how 1-1 felt so much better than 0-0. We've got FC Sheriff to preview. Varane's injury to talk about. Cristiano Ronaldo's situation. A Borough update that hasn't involved a U-turn from Laurie Whitwell. And is Casemiro the new king of money? Emphasis on money. We'll answer that towards the end of the pod. That's worth waiting for, I'm sure. Right, let's introduce you to the panel then. Laurie Whitwell is with us. Hi, Laurie.
Hi, guys. How you doing? It's been a while, hasn't it?
A lot has happened since, certainly. Andy, you all right? Andy Mitten's with us?
All good, mate. Looking forward to this.
Back in Barca as well. Nice to see that bookshelf again. Laurie, you were there at Stamford Bridge. I said then that 1-1 felt better than 0-0. It certainly felt better than 1-0, didn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it was good that United scored in a game where they control Chelsea. I think it's a rare thing to go to Stamford Bridge and have that much possession, and it was just the final pass, wasn't it? It was some cautious moments in that first half where maybe a bit more bravery, a bit more creativity would have paid off. Bruno Fernandes was the one that put the passes through to get those chances that perhaps, you know, could have been resulted in goals, Anthony and Marcus Rashford. But I think it was encouraging as a display overall. You know, Graham Potter was there on the touchlines, and at Stamford Bridge it's great. The press box is like right behind the dugout, so you can see every sort of discussion that's going on, how the managers react, and Graham Potter from, you know, pretty much the first minute was kind of encouraging Ben Chilwell and Cucurella to kind of get more forward. He was shouting Chile quite a lot to kind of get him to move around, and then so it wasn't actually that much of a surprise when he made a substitution, you know, 36 minutes in or whatever it was, and then changed to a back four because United were sort of dominating that midfield. So I think, you know, as a kind of tactical battle between the two of them, because Erik ten Hag then obviously changed it, didn't he, with taking Sancho off and putting Fred on. I thought it was a really kind of engaging battle to observe, and so encouragement. But then that's, you know, unnecessary moment, I think, from Scott McTominay. I don't know if we want to debate whether it is a penalty or not. You know, I know there's always jostling in the area, but it just felt like a silly thing to do, to kind of gift Chelsea a chance like that, because it didn't look like they were going to score at any point prior to that. Chelsea, you know, the stadium's rocking, it's all up and high tempo. So for United to actually then respond to that in dramatic circumstances, I mean, that header from Casemiro was awesome, wasn't it? And the away end that followed was brilliant. The away end that obviously was cut by the Metropolitan Police decision to class this as a high-risk fixture. And, you know, the half-five kickoff was an issue in that, which we might touch on, actually. We've got a little item, an update on that in the column today that's on The Athletic. But I just thought the way that the players celebrated, Martinez grabbing a fan, bringing him towards him, usually it's the other way around, isn't it? You know, fans are grabbing players. Anthony standing on the hoardings, Casemiro losing his mind, Bruno giving it the fist pump. It just felt, yeah, that goal then gave a lot more energy, didn't it? A lot more positivity about the performance than a 0-0 or obviously a 1-0 would have done.
Yeah, Laurie, you've written about the tactical battle, and we'll talk about that in a minute. We'll also talk about Casemiro's header as well. Nick Miller's article on The Athletic said, given the moment and given the level of difficulty, you'll rarely see a better one this season. More than the header though, Andy, you'll rarely see a better moment for a fan base and a team connecting than that. That felt like a really important celebration for Manchester United, didn't it?
Because it was. Chelsea are obviously a good team. I think Manchester United didn't deserve to lose that match. When Casemiro came to England, one of the things he wanted to do was play in front of packed away ends. It doesn't really happen for him in Spain. When Real Madrid were playing all around the country, you've got 50 fans there travelling. Even at the Madrid derby, you've got hardly any. And that's a side of the culture which he was used to in Brazil, and he wanted to play in front of when he came to England. So for that goal to happen in front of that tight, small, former shed end where the United fans were over two tiers, with all those empty seats around them, which shouldn't have happened. No seats should have been full of travelling Reds. It was a great header. We've spoken on the podcast first at Ammonia away, just how good he is in the air. His statistics are frightening because he isn't the tallest. And for him to get that, got the point, stopped Chelsea getting 3 points. I think that's important as well because Manchester United stay really close to them. Probably meant that Scott McTominay didn't get a load of abuse for that penalty. And as you mentioned, Martinez, look who Martinez has played against in recent weeks. Done really well, playing against some of the best strikers in the world. For him to dive into the away end, everyone just walked home absolutely buzzing. And speaking to my mates on the Fulham Broadway, people were singing. Not, oh, what fun it is to see United win away, but it was always going to be a draw, wasn't it? Because every game against Chelsea is a draw. That's a fifth consecutive draw against Chelsea. But in the first half, I felt, first of all, I remember a game against Chelsea under David Moyes, and it was the first time in 20-odd years when I felt Manchester United wouldn't win a match because the team were on a decline. And Saturday was the first time in a long while where I felt Manchester United are going to win this match. And United have had some great results in recent years, but often on the counter-attack. They took the game to Chelsea, easily the best team in the first half. Lots of progress, lots of possession. Not sharp enough in front of goal, let's be honest. You've got to put some of them chances away. Even one of them would have made all the difference. But that Casemiro header was fantastic. And coming off the back of that amazing performance against Spurs, I think there's a good vibe about Manchester United.
Only a draw, Laurie, but was that Casemiro header the moment of the season so far?
Ooh, I mean, the Antony goal against Arsenal was pretty good, I think.
Up there.
Particularly with the Tiger Prowl celebration. That was a slightly different celebration. More
up there for different reasons, maybe, yeah?
Yeah, more staged than a kind of a raw.
Sancho's goal against Liverpool, I suppose, as well, when he sat down half of Old Trafford.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
No, but I do think just all the context of it, and we will mention the Ronaldo thing. I think that was the only thing I didn't mention in my, you know, first answer, which kind of tried to cover every single base of this podcast. But in the context of dropping Ronaldo, taking that affirmative action from the manager to, you know, as he says, instill standards and cultures at a club, no matter how big a name, to come away from it with a point is at least, you know, with a kind of positive feel out of it, is a positive thing. Because Ten Hag afterwards said it wouldn't have mattered if Casemiro hadn't scored. You know, that wasn't the important thing. The important thing is the wider picture and longer term aims of the club. And I think, obviously, that is, you know, true. But nonetheless, all the talk would have been about Ronaldo. I mean, there was enough talk. You know, we had Roy Keane and Gary Neville trading, you know, kind of incredible set two on the Sky Sports with Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank sort of, you know, bemused in the middle. But there would have been more even than that, you know, written, spoken about it, you know, could he have put those chances away? So for the fact that United actually did score and came away from Chelsea, you know, a really good team with a creditable performance and a point, I think, is a positive thing, yeah.
When teams are finishing games strongly, that's a good sign that there's a good team spirit. And
exactly,
we've seen it recently, even at Everton away when they were pushing towards the end and Varane came on as substitute and did really well. If Manchester United are finishing games strongly, that's a really good sign because there's been so many times when that hasn't happened. And when Chelsea went ahead, I thought, oh no, it's so unfair. I hate football. Never watching this sport again. So to come back, it was a weird feeling. I didn't expect United to dominate in the first half. And I was surprised when United came back into it. But what a header. And when you're buying the best midfielders in the world, you need and want some of those incredible moments like the Casemiro header.
And there was a little point as well, just more on Ten Hag, in that as soon as Jorginho scored that penalty, he calls Bruno Fernandes over to him, you know, his captain, and gives him instructions, which basically looked like, because then Fernandes went to Luke Shaw and Diogo Dalot to say, get forward. He was sort of pointing wide to the wings. So clearly he was thinking, right, okay, I know it's not exactly kind of revolutionary tactics, you know, fullbacks get forward, put crosses into the box, but...
Fergie time tactic.
Fergie time.
It's an old classic Manchester United tactic,
exactly,
isn't it?
And ultimately, listen, you know, Diogo Dalot had a cross from the right that was cleared, and then it's Luke Shaw's cross deep into the box from a sort of detached position that actually gets the goal. And I just... But more than that, even if it hadn't worked, I think it was just, you know, good to see Ten Hag being so alert to the situation, actively, instantly trying to do something about it, not kind of having to think about it and wonder what he was going to do. You know, clearly he's someone that wants to be the protagonist in this story of being a manager at Manchester United, rather than feeling like, you know, he's not particularly got a sturdy footing.
Yeah, your article is on The Athletic now. If people haven't read it, they can go and have a look. Tactics board, discipline and clear ideas. I think the one thing from the fans' perspective is latching on to a manager who is being proactive in-game and making positive changes to the side. Okay, sometimes they don't work, but you know, on a day like Saturday when they do work, that's often been a criticism of previous managers, Andy, that they've not been reacting to what we've been seeing in a match. Just go back to that bloody Fred booking for PSG and all that sort of stuff. It's just a really positive sign when you can see a manager making changes that make a difference.
Yeah, it was a big criticism of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think the first person who made the change on Saturday was Graham Potter, because he could see that his team were getting totally outclassed, especially in the middle. Lovely to say Manchester United dominating a top team away from home in the middle of the park, because that area of the pitch has been a weakness for Manchester United. So Potter made his change, and then Ten Hag made his change, and it completely affected the game then. Everything about the game changed. I thought the second half was quite boring until the dramatic end, but I thought the first half was really good. And that's what top-level managers do. They have the ability to do that. I know a lot of them are led by data at the moment, and they're looking at positions as well as all the stuff that they can see with their own eyes. But it was smart. And there were times under Ollie where you're like, just make a change, bring a substitute on. That's probably the best example with Fred, where people were saying, why have you not brought Nemanja Matic on? I did ask the question and just got told, because he's not fast enough to deal with PSG's very fast midfielders. Don't think we've got quite the same worry now with Manchester United. You've got different options there, different types of players. And Fred was brilliant against Tottenham. He wasn't so good against Chelsea. What he's got to push for is more consistency, and I think he knows that as well. And he can just look to Casemiro. He's like 8 out of 10 every week at the moment. It's really encouraging to see. Scott, he had a good start to this season. I think every United fan was cursing him after that penalty, apart from those who didn't think it was a penalty. And there were a few of them, but I just thought it was a penalty. And thankfully, Casemiro could rescue it. And then you get greedy, you think, drew 2 and won one game last week. If only it would have been another win against Newcastle if the chances would have been taken. But look at the quality of the teams Manchester United are playing. United have played 11 of the 9 of the top 11. Obviously, they can't play all of them because
they're one of them.
Manchester United are one of those teams.
Sure.
And only 2 of the bottom 9. So all things being equal, which it never is in football, because United often struggle to break down the weaker teams, Manchester United really should be doing better. And that adds more encouragement for me. If they start to... It's a shame that Palace game got cancelled, especially the Leeds game as well, because the league table might look slightly different. But I'm feeling all right about United at the moment. I think there's a good feeling about it.
Before we talk about the one sour note, really, which was Rafael Varane's injury, Casemiro's celebration, Laurie, the little jig that he did, which we've seen in slow motion so many times, I think I've watched it about 100 times already, it reminded me of Sir Alex Ferguson. You know that moment where you just sort of lose yourself, so you're not really sure exactly how to express the emotion, and you sort of do this little, like, hop and a skip. Amazing.
Yeah, I might have to steal that move for the dance floor, just as a little celebratory whenever a good tune comes on. Yeah, this is what I'm feeling like. But I suppose you can't really plan those kind of things, can you? It's supposed to be spontaneous.
Well, it just sort of like erupted out of him, and anyone who had any doubt about whether he wants to go and do it again,
yeah,
you know, after all the success he's had in Madrid, just look at that celebration for a draw.
It's a really, really true point that it looked like a genuine eruption of true feeling from within, and I really enjoy what Andy said there about, you know, him being able to go to away games where they have got a packed, you know, stand, and also, I mean, he did when he finished at Real Madrid, he won the Champions League again, and he said, "I want a new challenge." You know, it was you know, driven by his desire to leave Real Madrid rather than United, particularly actively pursuing Casemiro specifically. But then when that conversation starts, you know, they look at it and go, "Okay, this could really work for us." And you've got a midfield there of Casemiro and Eriksen, two players that are very comfortable on the ball. I mean, some of those passes that Casemiro did, we had a great angle for the one that he whipped out to the wing. I think it was it Antony or Diogo Dalot that it went to, where it looked like he was in a bit of trouble and he kind of turned and just put his foot round it. And then you had Eriksen as well, sort of turning out of tight spaces when Chelsea were trying to press. So to have two players that are very comfortable on the ball is really a departure from what they've had previously. I suppose you just hope that they can keep going, because obviously they're both over 30, so, you know, enjoy it while it lasts, I suppose. But it is great to see, to have such comfort in the midfield and players that clearly want to play for the club.
Yeah, that it screamed that, didn't it, that celebration. Let's talk about Varane then. It was reported after the game, quite distressing to see him and his reaction initially, wasn't it, when he got injured at Stamford Bridge. But it was reported that he had a lesion on his femoral bicep, which I have never heard of before, and had us all thinking immediately that he'd hurt his arm in some way and not his knee. United are saying that they want to give it a little bit more time before they make any sort of assessment of his exact situation. I guess from Varane's perspective, he's thinking about the World Cup and getting back for that. United, Andy, are thinking, can he play again for us before the World Cup? As far as you understand it, do you think we'll see him again before Boxing Day?
As far as I understand, what you just said about his description of the injury is accurate, and I did check that out the day after on Sunday, but these things can change as well. When he looked really emotional, when he went off, I felt it could be something really serious, as if he knows his body better than anybody else, and is he going to be out for 6 months, 9 months, something like that. So I was quite pleased to be here in 3 to 4 weeks. I'd be very surprised if he plays for Manchester United before the World Cup. Obviously, the World Cup is a major thing for him, and that's understandable. So Forest, I think, is the most likely time then he comes back. And I can sort of live with that. I can't live with what happened to him last season, where he just missed far too many games. But such a good player. And his partnership with Martinez has been so encouraging this season. They're completely different types of defenders, but they complement each other. And I think the best central defensive partnerships are like that. If you look at Vidic and Rio, they had different skill set. And it's the same with Varane and Martinez. And I know there's other defenders there, and I know that Lindelof came on and did okay, and Harry Maguire's coming back as well. He's also looking forward to the World Cup. But the two who were mentioned are the men in the moment, and I think that they are the first choice central defenders for Manchester United. And when I see that spine with Varane and with Casemiro, I just think, team's starting to look like winners again. Going to places, not fearing a defeat. Don't forget, as recently as August, Manchester United had been on the run of 7 straight away defeats. We feel so far from that point at the moment. And I know there's going to be more bumps along the way, but I feel really encouraged by the recruitment from the summer, the way things are going, and them top world-class players. And as Laurie said, they wanted to come to Manchester United. Clearly, they're well paid. You know, Casemiro didn't say, "I want to play in England and I really want to play for Stockport County." He wanted to go to a big club on a big stage. But all my understanding of the situation with both of them, and I believe this, is they really, really wanted to come. And there were other players who said they wanted to come, but it was more about money. And Manchester United said no to that. So if them two can stay fit, then that adds 20% to Manchester United. And you'd have the confidence to go to places like Anfield and and go toe-to-toe with Liverpool for the first time in a few years.
Yep. Keep your eyes peeled to The Athletic for updates on Raphael Varane's injury situation. Remember, you can subscribe and pay just £1 a month for the first 6 months when you sign up at theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. You can read all our great writing on Manchester United and the world of football as a whole, plus get ad-free versions of our podcasts as well. That's £1 a month for the first 6 months when you sign up at theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So, of course, there was a major development in Cristiano Ronaldo's situation after we last recorded this podcast, and that was obviously the revelation that it emerged that he had refused to come on as a sub during that game against Tottenham. Of course, the statement came shortly after as well to say that he was being suspended for the game against Chelsea. There was reports of showdown talks on Monday. Well, we can confirm that they didn't happen because Manchester United's players were given a day off today, so there was no one actually at Carrington to have those showdown talks, but the two will be speaking in due course to sort out exactly how Ronaldo and the club moves forward from this point. It's usually David Ornstein, of course, writing the Monday news column, but they brought in the big boys this week, so Laurie Whitwell wrote it instead. What's the latest then on Cristiano Ronaldo's situation, Laurie? Because I can't believe quite how much has happened since we last recorded on Thursday, just on this one topic.
It's mad, isn't it? Like, we were ahead of the game, I felt, like, with what we were saying from the fact that he'd left the stadium early. Like, that was a decent line, the fact that everyone saw him leave the touchline, but then actually for him to go home before the final whistle was pretty staggering. And then, yeah, it then emerged that actually he had refused to come on. Credit to Chris Wheeler and the Mail, they broke that very quickly on the 5 o'clock, about 5 o'clock in the evening. We'd heard the same and we were trying to sort of stand it up, basically. And then we'd also heard that Ten Hag was going to separate him from the first team group, which I was trying to establish what did that actually look like. So, you know, you kind of try and put as many calls in as you can and you realise that it's a story that everyone's chasing. So you sort of frantically putting pressure on. And then the statement came out from United, though. So as soon as they did that, you realise, OK, this is the steps they're taking. He's actually not going to be training with the team. He's not in the matchday squad for Chelsea. OK, well, they'll reassess it after that. But I think that was quite a bold move by United to actually put a statement out, because they could have just sort of done it privately, but they've actually wanted to communicate that they are...
They had a press conference the next day as well, didn't they? You know, Andy and I were speaking to Erik ten Hag, you know, less than 24 hours after doing the podcast, so they could have just left it till then, in fairness.
Yeah, I think they wanted to communicate that they were behind him on this decision. I mean, it goes back to the authority that Erik ten Hag has at the club with signings and contract decisions, things like that. This is something that he felt is essential to do to maintain standards at the club. And I think it's the right thing. You can't have a player that... leaves the stadium early and refuses to come on. We're trying to figure out exactly the refusal to come on bit, because I get it. I was looking at it thinking he sort of stood there, isn't he, in front of the dugout as Alanga and Eriksen are going on against Spurs late on in the game, almost like, don't forget about me, boss, I am here, I want to go on. So I wonder if Erik then sort of said to him, right, you're going on, but it's after these two subs, and he's kind of thinking, that's insulting to me, it's injury time.
Why does that matter, though, when he refused?
Well, I don't know, I'm just curious.
As part of those subs or
it's just, I don't know, my curiosity. I'm just kind of intrigued to kind of see how it shook down, you know, and trying to work out at what point Ronaldo, he obviously lost his head, didn't he, really? I mean, he's kind of accepted that
in
the Instagram post. Yeah, so.
Which also came after the podcast.
Well, there we go. And we're still waiting.
Need to speak to them next time, make sure they get it out before we record, yeah.
So I got a call from Laurie at 18:44 on Thursday.
That's Spanish time, just to check, Andy, by the way. So 5:45. Don't mind my chronology to be mixed up here.
Okay, 5:44. I was stood by the River Irwell in Manchester.
Oh, so I'm wrong then, aren't I? I saw you weren't in Barcelona.
It was on that story. And 2 minutes later, a club statement from Manchester United Cristiano will not be part of the squad for Saturday's game against Chelsea. So it made me laugh that. Just minding my own business, having a beer.
Ah, beer, no cocktails.
Beer brewed in Salford, absolutely no cocktails. And then bang, 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 bang. You know, you could just see the news just coming through. So I totally ignored all of it and carried on having a beer. And then the next morning, Ian and I were at Carrington. I think we were the only two journalists who didn't ask Eric about the Cristiano Ronaldo thing.
Well, if we didn't know that, enough people on Twitter have jumped on that, haven't they? And they're all telling me, why are you pulling faces when Eric Ten Hag says he's refused to play? And I didn't even realise I was being filmed at that point, but I had a really heavy cold.
Oh.
So the reason my mouth was wide open was so I could breathe. It was no more than that, really, to be honest.
I couldn't see you because I was sat behind you and I can't see through heads, and I was feeling a bit rough myself. But I thought that Ten Hag dealt with it really well in the press conference.
Yeah, I agree.
I felt that he showed that he's in control and he was very matter of fact. I was impressed. I walked out of Carrington the other day with my opinion of him pretty consistent with how it's been since we're on the pre-season tour. He is a disciplinarian, but he's not power crazy with it. He's not anal with it like at times Louis van Gaal was criticised for. So I think he's handled it well, and it pushes it back onto Cristiano now to, what do you want here? And the facts are, he wanted to leave and nobody came in for him. So there's so much noise in the summer. Yeah, but. No. The fact is, he wanted to leave Manchester United and nobody came in for him. So if he gets his head together and he can help Manchester United, then that's absolutely great. But I think Eric Ten Hag has come out of this a lot better than Cristiano Ronaldo.
We were wondering, weren't we, after the Vallecano game, where he went home at half-time and Ten Hag said, unacceptable. And, you know, my question was, okay, well, if it's unacceptable, what's the next step then? Is it just say it's unacceptable and don't do it again? He basically said, yeah, that's it. So then Ronaldo has done it again. So he has to have consequences to it. Otherwise, his word doesn't mean anything to the players. So it's not just for the Ronaldo situation. It's also for the rest of the players to say, actually, I will take action if there's something that steps out of line. It will be, you know, a singular thing. It's not like this is going to go on and on. If we have a conversation, you want to come back in, you can come back in. It's a very straightforward, logical kind of a conclusion that he's drawn. But it also means that when he is shouting on the touchline for a player to make a run, or when he is asking them to do something in a training drill, they know that actually he's doing it with a purpose, with a reason behind it.
An expectation of you actually doing it.
Yeah. And if they don't do it, then, you know, there will be consequences. So I admire what he's done here. It's a show of strength, for sure. But again, Ronaldo's not going to be a player for him beyond this season. You know, we'll discuss the January issue perhaps next. But, you know, he's not the future for Ten Hag. So he understands that he can actually, he's got the authority. Ralf Rangnick didn't have the authority. He's an interim manager. Ten Hag's going to be here for longer than Ronaldo. So that's where, and that's why the club have backed him.
Well, forget January even for the moment. The interesting aspect for me, Andy, and I thought it was one of the most interesting things in Ten Hag's press conference as well, was the idea that it wasn't quite finished necessarily. So, you know, this punishment has been handed down. Ronaldo's made his statement. Eric Ten Hag and Cristiano Ronaldo had spoken, but there was the sort of inference in that press conference that they were going to have to speak again to then decide whether or not Ronaldo was going to be reintegrated to the group and be picked potentially for the next game. I thought that was really intriguing because that sort of suggested that there's the potential for this not to end here, that there might be more to come. And actually seeing now whether Ronaldo is involved or not against Sheriff is probably going to be the first sign that we get about how exactly this punishment has been received by Ronaldo.
Good. It's proportional. It's accurate. Cristiano Ronaldo has a contract at Manchester United. I didn't see any glee in Eric Ten Hag. I felt that he'd rather not have this problem, but it has been a nettle that he's needed to grasp almost from the start in his time at Manchester United. And I think that he's done it well. Cristiano knows who's boss at Manchester United. If he's got a million suitors lined up, then go and take them. The truth is that he hasn't. And he'll be coming in his own mind, accepting the fact that he's not the player that he once was. But he still can offer things to Manchester United. I said last week during the Tottenham game, that was actually perfect for him with all those players buzzing around. If he would have been in the middle of that, you wouldn't have put it past Cristiano to score a couple of goals. Alas, that didn't happen. Ten Hag is in control. He's the manager. The most important person at a football club should be the manager. And as Laurie said, Ralf Rangnick was only ever interim. He didn't have that power base. He didn't have everyone pushing in the same direction as him. Erik ten Hag does have got people behind him, supporting him. United have acted well. Cristiano Ronaldo has basically got to take that on the chin. Train hard, and if he comes back more determined to play well, this United team actually needs goals. Not scored anything like enough goals this season. There's going to be loads of games. There's games at the moment. You said about Sheriff. He has been playing in the Europa League with mixed success so far this season. But is it inconceivable that he starts against Sheriff and scores two goals? Not at all.
I think he will start against Sheriff, Laurie.
I don't know. It'd be a big shift, wouldn't it?
Hard to know, wouldn't
it? It depends how the talks go. And you can imagine that Ronaldo is still seething. Whatever he says now, Ronaldo, you know, still wants out, doesn't he? You know, this is going to end in a kind of a pretty, I don't know, a sad way, really, I suppose, given how thrilling it was when he came back. And we were excited, weren't we? But I wonder if he can get his head round, you know, just not being a starter every week. That's it. It comes down to that. If he can accept, you know, I mean, maybe he will say that it's insulting to not get sent on against Man City and to then be sent on for like the last minute or something against Spurs. So that he will think that is more than, okay, if you send me on for 30 minutes against Spurs, I'll take that. You know, it's probably gradients, I don't know. But so if he can get his head around that, then yeah, I guess we could start against Sheriff. But I'd perhaps be surprised just because Ten Hag hasn't really changed his team all that much, even for the Europa. He still needs to win that game. I know it's Sheriff and they should be able to beat them fairly comfortably, but you know, they need to really go into that Real Sociedad game with a chance to top the group, as we've said before, to try and avoid those two extra fixtures in the knockout phase. But yeah, we'll see. As you said earlier, you know, the players are off on Monday as we record this. Ten Hag decided that after the Chelsea game, you know, they deserved the 24-hour break extra after playing four games in 10 days. So we'll see how talks go, you know, on Tuesday, once we presume Cristiano Ronaldo is back in. But the kind of wider, longer picture for Man United is, as Andy says, you know, the offer that he had in the summer was from Al Hilal, you know, a multi-million pound offer, enormous value to him personally. And I think United would have got a transfer fee out of it, but not Champions League club. That's basically saying, I accept semi-retirement and, you know, it was never really on the table. There was, in terms of interest, there was obviously lots of clubs that were approached, you know, by his agent, Jorge Mendes. Chelsea were probably the one that he thought, you know, that's going to be my option here. Todd Boehly wanted him, Thomas Tuchel didn't, and that's where it ended. Whether that changes now that Graham Potter's in charge, I don't know, but they've obviously got Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang now. So are there any clubs out there for him? I don't think anyone would pay a transfer fee, so it comes down to Manchester United, can they have an agreement with Cristiano Ronaldo where he departs the club and it's a free transfer? I think if they, you know, if it got to a stage where he was becoming so difficult for Ten Hag, it was detrimental to the squad, they would accept that because it would save them, you know, by far their highest earner in wages for the final 6 months if he's not contributing to the team in a positive way. What I think they won't do is pay him up so that, you know, whatever, you know, you can come to these agreements, can't you, with players? Okay, you're contracted for another 6 months. It's worth X amount of money, you know, 2-3 million, whatever it is. We'll pay you a percentage of that and you can go now. I don't think United will do that because that costs them money. Then they've got to, you know, perhaps buy a replacement or do something. They might, I suppose they could get some kind of low cost emergency if they really needed to, but it would be a body out the door and Ten Hag would want that replacing. So I don't think United would countenance having to pay twice for the privilege of that. So, but it's a really interesting dynamic that they're going to see now. And the World Cup is upon us, isn't it? You know, he wants to play for Portugal at the World Cup. How does that all work into it as well?
Yeah, I think publicly as well, the club have been very clear that Erik ten Hag sees Cristiano Ronaldo as an important part of his squad. That was reiterated multiple times in the press conference. It's in the statement. You speak to anyone around the club and that's the line that they repeat as well. So, you know, that's maybe not the full picture if you're going to sort of read behind the scenes and the inference in some of the things that have happened, but at least the public stance remains that for the moment. Just before we move it on then, there's also a line in the column that used to be David Ornstein's and is now Laurie Whitwell's on The Athletic about the fan advisory board, which is basically, of course, a group that the club put together of sort of key individuals from the fan base to entrench the link between the fans and the club. One of the ideas that came up in the aftermath, of course, of the failed European Super League plot. What do you make of of what's been said, Andy. So basically the board, the fan advisory board, have met with Joe Glazer to discuss the financial results and especially spoken about the dividends, which of course is a major, major issue.
It is a major issue when Manchester United are losing money and they're taking those significant dividends, including some which were delayed from during the COVID point. I don't think it's a good look. I think that the Glazers have seen their asset grow in terms of the value of Manchester United. I think if they're not planning to go anywhere and they say that, and then not taking a dividend would be one less reason to be annoyed with them every single year. So it's not a good look, and I think it's good that the fan advisory board asks the questions. It has been asked before. It was asked in that very first talk with Joel Glazer, and he pushed back and said, we don't think what we take is a huge number in the greater scheme of things, given the revenue of Manchester United. But it's also about optics, this. And I think if they didn't take those dividends, that would be good. Or if they said, we're not taking a dividend for 5 years, we're putting the money back into stadium development or expanding Carrington, something like that. I don't think there'd be any objections to that. Do I think that will happen from the Glazers not taking a dividend? No, I don't.
I agree with what Andy's saying there. It'd be interesting as to what Joel Glazer's response to this is, but I think it's quite good that they've got this fan advisory board that actually has the opportunity to directly ask him these questions and, you know, I think put them quite robustly to him, you know, have these honest conversations. And okay, it's up to him whether, you know, change his course on whatever it is, you know, in this case dividends, but there's other things. I think it was like a 4-hour meeting that, so they discussed a lot of things, and so that's the idea, is that he can at least hear directly from fans, so that you know, colours his decision making process. But I think if he so I think it, at least they've got that sort of face to face, you know, confrontation. If, you know, and clearly the dividends, I mean, is there a way that, you know, do the Glazers have to take dividends? You know, if could it be for the other shareholders that take the money? If they're talking about the stock price and, you know, kind of trying to retain the value in that way, you know, do the Glazers have to take it? Or if they do, could they then reinvest the money into something else if they wanted to show, you know, that real support? Because there's a disconnect, isn't there, between having, as Andy said, the losses, but also if the team on the pitch isn't performing well, how can you justify saying that you are a sporting excellence as a main priority, but then also you're taking money out of the club? Like, it doesn't, those two things don't match up, do they? You know, so anyway, we'll see. I just thought it was quite a good thing that at least the fans can have this direct consultation, which obviously, as you say, was from the Super League collapse. That was one of the products of it.
Okay, if you want to know more about this, of course, you can go and read the column that's on The Athletic at the moment. Remember, this is the offer. £1 a month for the first 6 months. If you're a new subscriber, sign up at theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Okay, we need to do a quick roundup then before we finish the podcast. First up on the agenda, Michael Carrick, Middlesbrough, and an assistant that could well be the former Manchester United assistant, Mike Phelan. Now, Andy, I'd love to come to you on this, but I think it's more important that we give Laurie the opportunity to stake exactly the current situation according to his sources. Take it away, Laurie.
Yeah, God, here we go. This is going to get reverse ferreted within 48 hours, isn't it? Yeah, so anyway,
I look forward to that.
Do we know what reverse ferret is? Is that like a well-known phrase, by the way? Because I said this to somebody the other day and they went, what are you on about? And it's basically right in newspapers when...
I've never heard it, but I know roughly what you mean.
You get what I'm saying, yeah. A story's looking one way and then, no, reverse ferret, we're changing tack. So yeah, I think Mike Phelan is somebody that Michael Carrick respects and would be open to having on his coaching staff. So we'll see how that develops. He's still in talks, isn't he, about actually taking the job. It seems like it's going to happen, as we've said now, I think we said it. But yeah, but the most interesting thing I thought was just the fact that Phelan is actually still, you know, technically employed by Man United. It hasn't been agreed in a severance or a new role. There's been an ambassadorial role discussed, but I don't think there's been progress on that. So yeah, I mean, I thought maybe would that mean that Middlesbrough would have to pay compensation? I'm led to believe that, you know, United wouldn't stand in any way. You know, if Phelan wanted to take that job, and Middlesbrough offered it, then I think the United would be happy and say, you know, thanks very much for your time and service. But it's just an interesting one that it hasn't actually come to a head already.
I think people at Middlesbrough like the idea of Michael Carrick coming in there as manager. Mike Phelan spent this weekend in Kuala Lumpur working for Malaysian TV. He had stayed on the payroll at Old Trafford. He had a good relationship with Richard Arnold, who I think appreciated some of his football insights as well. But yeah, it was an odd situation and absolutely worth writing about that he wasn't sacked. It wasn't like, okay, you're out. He just carried on getting paid. So hopefully there can be a resolution to that where all parties are happy.
Right, we need to clear up the cryptic thing I said at the top of the podcast about Casemiro being the king of money. There was a bit of a debate, a clash of generations, you might call it, in the WhatsApp group over the weekend about whether it's okay or not to refer to Manchester as Manny. How did it start? Who said Manny first? Can you remember, Andy?
Yeah, I said it, but I don't use it. I used it as a derogatory term for pie eaters who come into Manchester from outside Manchester on a night out and refer to Manchester.
Hang on a minute. Our international audience is going to need pie eaters explained, I think, as well. What, do you mean people from outside the city centre, basically?
People from outside of Manchester in the satellite towns around Manchester.
Eat pies.
Well, Wigan are proud to be pie eaters. They're absolutely... They have a pie contest there. So I said that people who use the word Manny are people from the satellite towns around Manchester who come into Manchester on their biannual night out and say they're going into Manny. And I said that no Mancunian would call Manchester Manny, and then got shouted down by some of my younger colleagues who said that, well, Carl said he uses the word Manny, and so did Laurie. And then I'm
on your side, Andy.
Nice
so
one.
Having come from Oldham, I'm probably classified as a pie eater, in all fairness, but I still wouldn't refer to Manchester as Manny. It's always been town.
Town, I agree.
It's town first. Yeah. It's town first. Can I clarify that?
So but, even my like mum would say we're going into town on the bus.
Yeah, exactly.
It would never be we're going into Manny. I mean,
I think it's more.
My mum would never use the word Manny for a start. But.
If you're away from Manchester and you're saying I'm going to Manny, whereas if you're like in the outskirts like I am here, you know I'm going into town. Because I've put Manny into my WhatsApps to try and check how this conversation started. And I'm noticing that actually I have used it quite a few times in text messages previously. But people are...
Oh, there you go.
People are saying it back to me. I've got like a contact here who is, I would say, a pretty cool guy. Okay, I think he's from London. But, you know, he's like my age. He's saying Manny. Because we thought it was a younger generation, didn't we? We thought there's rappers, there's Bugsy Malone... H says
because
it.
Because H said it was Manny, we decided that only young people like rap music. I think that was another sort of like
stereotype,
general assumption that was made by the group as well.
First time I heard it was at an Oasis concert in the 90s, and a lad I knew came down from Preston.
Pie eater.
Obviously a pie eater, or a yonner. That's another word we've got for people like that.
Can we say that on the podcast?
This yonner says...
He said it about 20 times, so I hope so.
He says, I love coming into Manny. And everyone just looked at him and went, what? He went, Manny. What? The only Manny in Manchester is in the Stone Roses, mate. No one calls it Manny if you're from Manchester. But clearly there are people with a different opinion to that.
This is great. I've just looked up yonner on Google and it's come up with something called the Wiktionary, which I've never heard of before, but I guess is some link to Wikipedia. And it explains it as an unsophisticated resident of the towns of, first up, Oldham. So I'm literally the epiphany.
You've had an epiphany that you're the epiphany
of a yonner, yeah.
You're a yonner.
So has Andy just been insulting you without you knowing it?
Without me knowing it, yeah. Of the towns of Oldham, Rochdale, or surrounding areas. Now more widely applied to residents of any satellite towns of Greater Manchester who speak with a broad Lancashire accent. A Lancashire hillbilly or bumpkin.
Yeah, that's totally accurate.
Cheers, mate.
I'll tell you where I think part of it might have come from. Go back 20 years and Manchester City tried to claim Manchester as their own. And you got in town on a Saturday night and all the bars just be full of United. All the doors, loads of the doors were run by United lads, very well-known figures in Manchester. And we're like, well, if you're all from Manchester, where are you? because they were saying, we're the Manchester club, we're the real Manchester club. And like, you go out in town, it's just full of United fans. And I think an extension of that was, you're basically just all Yonners. City, you're from Yonners. And from that came a chant which suggested that all Manchester City fans came from Stockport. So City started it first by saying, do one back to London, saying that United had a load of fans in London.
Laurie, aren't you from
Stockport?
Yeah,
he's taking us both out here today.
Bit and shoot from the hip.
United fans still sing, do one back to Stockport. So it's extremely pedantic. It's extremely...
There was a girl from Stockport. Her name was Hazel Grove. She'd been Sporting City since she was 8 years old. So the story goes. Yeah.
Do you know, I've never heard that, but Hazel Grove was our rival school.
Although she's been to every game, she feels she's overdue. She's never seen him win a cup and she's flipping 42. It wasn't flipping and it might have not even been 42. It was probably 32 at the time, but it was a song that was sang when City didn't win anything, basically.
We could go even deeper, and we're definitely not doing this on this podcast because this would open a can of worms. If you have chips on bread, what do you call it? A balm or a butty?
Chip muffin.
Or a muffin?
Chip muffin.
I'd say right. Chip butty, I think.
So I'd say a chip boy or a chip or a chip balm. But because you're a Yonner...
Is it on a piece of bread or a muffin?
Well, because you're a Yonner, you're going to say muffin because you're a farmer from the hills, basically. But if you're from Manchester...
Well, also, Yonner comes from the reference of it, of me being from yonder, as in, like, it's an old term from around these parts about being from outside, basically. Whichever way you look at it, it's quite insulting, really.
I know people from inner city North Manchester who would argue strongly that it's never a balm, that it's a muffin, and people, you know, there's big arguments about this, but we'll save that for another podcast because we're going to start getting loads of messages in now saying it's a chip balm, it's a muffin.
So can we just clarify, are we allowed to call it Manny then or not? What's our verdict?
Yeah,
I don't think it should be allowed.
I think anyone who calls it Manny should stand trial in The Hague.
Okay, it's quite extreme.
Can people let us know what they think in the comments?
Yeah, that's probably the best way of deciding it.
That's the only way we want to decide. We'll have to do a poll.
Yeah. Manny in, Manny out. Hashtag Manny in, Manny out. Let us know. Right, well, I've enjoyed that, and I hope we've sort of... Well, we didn't really set the record straight on that, did we, necessarily? We've just opened up the debate, but I look forward to setting it straight in the future. Remember, you can subscribe to The Athletic for more Yonners chat. For just £1 a month for the first 6 months, go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. But Andy, Laurie, thank you both so much, despite you being from Stockport, Laurie.
You from yonder.
Andy's just buried us both, basically, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, never mind. I'm going to go back to yonder now, so we'll see you on the next podcast. We're back on Thursday, aren't we, after the Sheriff game. We'll speak to you then. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.